Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
And we're joined in studio by Eddie O'Sullivan and Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent. So we'll start with Ireland 23, Fiji 20. Not a perfect performance by any means, lads, to say the least. And I suppose, Eddie, the tricky thing here, the more important thing ultimately as well here for Joe Schmidt, is to try and fairly assess individual performances in a team which featured 13 changes.
Yeah, I think he would have focused more on kind of the 8 guys that weren't involved against South Africa. Like, when you look at it, there's 2 guys started and there was another bunch of guys who had been involved in South Africa on the bench. So kind of the guys he was probably putting the rule over most would have been the 2 centres, Farrell McCluskey, Dave Kearney back in, McGrath, Porter, Delane, Jordy Murphy and Jack Conan. They're the guys that were kind of coming in from the cold, probably won't see rugby again this autumn with Ireland. So that was probably their moment of opportunity. I think he was also looking to see, is Joy Carberry going to nail down that number 2 spot behind Jonathan Sexton and that shot? There's a couple of other things like that. I think the problem is that I don't think any of the first group of guys there, maybe apart from Jack Conan, really moved the dial. I thought Conan did well, but it's a very competitive back row. I thought all the other guys kind of didn't really make things change. Probably Jack McGrath is probably the guy who probably maybe lost out the most, because now it looks like that Keane Healy's back and Kilcoyne is chomping at his heels, and I think Jack McGrath might have gone out to 3rd on the depth chart now from a guy who was a starter, you know.
Yeah.
So there are things like that he would have wanted to get out of it. And 13 changes, I think he knew he was sailing close to the wind. They were talking up Fiji. We always talk up the opposition, but I think he was right to talk to them up a bit, because there was a good Fiji team. But he ended up probably sailing a bit closer than he wanted to with 5 minutes to go. Like, that game could have got away from us if we got an unlucky break. But I think he'd be glad to get out the other side of it. And I'd say probably the thing that he'll think about as well is, having dominated the second half with possession and territory to score 6 points, we should have done better than that, you know. So it's a lot there to chew on at the end of the day, you know, from.
Yeah. On the TV interviews, Rory, he called it a scratchy performance, and then went on to talk up a lot of, he name-checked a lot of players, which you never see Joe Schmidt really do in too much detail, and actually talked up an Irish performance, whereas usually he'll say things like, well, the scoreline flattered us.
Yeah.
What was he saying in the press conference about things?
Yeah, something similar. Right. I think it's a sure sign that he's probably filing those players away for a little while and we're not going to see them. You know, you're right, he doesn't normally, you know, when you see an obvious good performance out there, he'll usually find the 1 or 2 things that went wrong in it, you know, when he's talking to you. So, yeah, he wasn't positive about the performance. Yeah, he talked up a couple of individuals, but you could see that he was unhappy with the way that the team performed as a whole, with the second half in particular. You know, with the concession of that try before half time, he seemed to single out as that kind of pivotal turning point, because that gave Fiji the momentum coming into the second half. Quite clearly, the intercept pass and that try, you know, would have infuriated him, because that's the kind of thing that just shouldn't happen on his watch, he would think. So yeah, Eddie's right, he would have got an awful lot out of it. You know, you're talking, he looked at the team beforehand and he looked at the bookies saying it was a 25 point spread, and I just couldn't see how this Ireland team are 25 point favourites against anyone in the top 10 in the world. It didn't make any sense. You know the centre partnership are probably Ireland's 5th and 6th choice centres. You have a tight head prop who's only ever started 1 senior game a tight head before in his career. You know, you've your number 2 9s and 10 in a team that never played a number 2 9 and 10. So I always thought it was going to be a little bit like that. Fiji were great to watch. You know, Ireland probably didn't cause them as many problems as they should, but as an exercise, he probably got a lot more value out of it than he would have got if they'd ran in a load of tries against Canada.
I would say he would have been happy at halftime with the tempo of the game, and I think Carberry was really on top of his game up to halftime. All the good things that happened were around Carberry, those little spots out the back, those little wraparound plays. Carberry was in the middle of all that. He was really buzzing and hopping, and when he was in that place, and I think Fiji defended hard but not very smart. You know, the 2 tries we got were just pretty poor defence from Fiji. Like, for Carberry's first break, he ended up marking the Fiji tight end, Mafu, and Mafu turned his shoulders out. The other guy sat down, he went through. But I thought the beauty of that was not the break, was the pass. That's off his left hand, 15 metres to sweeten him on the money. It was superb. But again, the second try, I thought that, again, you know, Fiji were disjointed. But what I felt at half time was, given where Fiji were playing hard but not smart, maybe without the ball, if Ireland kept that tempo on the game in the second half, kept that patience, They would probably run away with the game, maybe 15, 20 points. It might have been closer. I think 25 points to Bucky's was a bit much, but I think they might have got away a lot more comfortably. But the problem in the second half, for some reason, is that the game slowed down in terms of Ireland's tempo, and the rucks became glacially slow, and there was less wraparounds, less spots out the back, became one-off runners, and we turned over some balls in really good positions because Fiji were kind of causing all sorts of problems at ruck by sometimes contesting and sometimes not contesting. They caused a lot of confusion. I think you look at that and worry about that, because we had 75% territory and 70% possession in the second half, and they turned over a bundle of balls. I think they turned over like 14 times, and we only got 6 points. That would worry you that we didn't cash in more. And I think what would probably frustrate him more than anything is that, having had a good first half, I felt at half time, look, we just go up in the second half now and just kick on at this, keep Carberry ducking and diving, and we're going to pull away. But it just slowed to a kind of a malaise in the second half. And that was the frustrating part of it. And in the end, you're kind of the clock was against Fiji in the end, not us. We were trying to get out of the game with a win. You know, and apart from that crazy tip tackle, that was the winning penalty. So that's probably frustrating, not to kick on into the second half like we did the first. I thought the first half was good.
Okay. When you talk about the ruck there, so Fiji made it difficult for us by sometimes contesting and sometimes not contesting. So that in effect changes what we are intending to do at the ruck, presumably. Is there no way that we can take a one-size-fits-all, we're going to do X at the ruck regardless of whether they contest or not contest? Or do we have to try and almost predict or react to what they're going to do?
We should always do what we've always done, is get two people past the ball. That half yard, the golden yard is that half yard, that space just beyond the football. The problem there, I think, is that when Fiji didn't contest, not only did we not put two guys into that space, we put one guy, and that one guy didn't get past the ball, he stayed over the ball. And when Fiji saw that, they counter-rucked. And sometimes they turned us over, and sometimes they just slowed it down. Then we had to put in the extra bodies. Okay. But it turns what should be a 2 second ruck into a 5 second ruck.
And usually, if it's our first starting 15 under Joe Schmidt, have we generally, regardless of whether they're contesting or not contesting, have we got those two fellas over the ball usually?
Yeah. But that'd be standard operating procedure.
Across the board for everything.
Yeah, of course. I don't think they went out this week and they had a discussion about whether we put one or two into the ruck. I think the guys didn't react to it. They just should have blasted that space, won the space. The ball's sitting behind their heels for the halfback. Away it goes and off you play.
Okay.
That we got a bit of that in the first half. And then in the second half, we stopped doing that. And there was times in the first half we got turned as well, because we were starting to see, oh, they're not in here, we don't have to commit as much. That was a flawed strategy. But I'm sure they would have talked about it at half time. I said, like, let's get two people through the ruck, leave the ball at your heels, and away it goes. And we stopped doing that. And this would be a worry for Argentina. They're not jumping forward too much, but Argentina are like ace slowing down your ruck. Like, they're big, heavy men, and they're in around there, you know, pushing and pulling. And I guarantee you this week there'll be a lot of talk about the ruck.
Well, I think Joe Schmidt will be livid about that situation, Rory, because by the standards his teams have set, that is a monumental change from every fine detail being worked on. I like it. It's a, you know, not having two men, that's almost polar opposite to what has been done previously. So I'd say he'd be pulling his hair out. That's a huge one.
When you dip below the starting 15 and, you know, the kind of the top level players, you're not only losing the ability that they have, you're probably losing the concentration levels, the experience that they're able, the detail that they put into their performances. So this is the other things that he's discovering about these players. These are the reasons he doesn't pick them on a week-to-week basis. So you're losing the attention to detail that maybe a Robbie Henshaw brings to the table, the kind of intangible things that we don't know about that Joe Schmidt sees and says, this is my guy at 22, he's going to take over from Ryan O'Driscoll and Gordon Darcy. So I think there's partly that, and he's learned, you know, that he's seen this in action now, and it justifies the reasons why these guys are down the pecking order in the first place. It will infuriate him. It's
like, I think there can't be that much of a gap between our top guys and the next batch. Sounds to me maybe like these guys are victims of the fact that there's 13 changes, and if one of them was to slot into the main team, they would have been just fine.
The only thing I'd say about that, Joe, is a ruck is a ruck is a ruck, whether it's, you know, 13 changes or no changes. Like,
okay. You're not giving them the free pass.
Rucks are the same. Like, it's about winning that space. And what we tend to do a lot in, you see, with say with the starting 15 when there was full metal jacket stuff, is a lot of leeching. So the guy is on the ball carrier before he goes to contact instantaneously, and then he's blasting beyond him, and the ball carrier just goes down, and that space is automatically won. Sometimes one guy, sometimes two guys, but that space is won. We neglected to win that space, and it's hard to give a reason why, because it's not it's nothing new, but you know, you do it at club level, you do it at every level of the game. Mm. That's how rucks are won nowadays. Mm. And I think the referees now have become very lenient on sealing off. Mm. They let you seal off because it's clean as a positive movement, cleaning out, and you get away with a lot now when you have the ball. You don't get away with half as much without it. Mm. So I think for some bizarre reason we let Fiji dictate the speed of our ruck ball, and that was the demise of the second half. That's where we kind of dropped into this kind of torpor of not doing anything, and we got turned over a couple of times as well, which is even worse.
The separate motivation probably played a part as well. I mean, these guys went into this game knowing it was their only chance. They probably wanted to be seen to carry ball. I don't think the second rows hit enough rucks. I thought, you know, Jordy Murphy seemed to be on his own in an awful lot of rucks, whereas Ulton Langer, number four, he carried the ball very well, but it didn't see him getting down and dirty in the way that you want your first arriver to do.
Yeah, but that would indicate we maybe lost our pods. We tend to play on pod systems in Ireland. You guys have a couple of guys with them before they take the ball. They rarely take it on their own, or they know if they're on their own, there's a couple of the cavalry going to arrive. We seem to lose that shape, which is probably a bit of, to be fair, that might be more explained by a lot of players not having played together before. Mm. That is a factor. And I think the other thing that that Joe Schmidt referred to in passing at the end was that in a game like that, when we threw the intercept pass and suddenly it was even, everybody tightened up.
Sure.
So then we started to go back to playing safe, one-off runners, not take risks, because we know these guys, one mistake, these guys are going to go 60 metres and score. Like, they are ace at that, as we saw in the first half. So guys do tighten up. That's human nature. Yeah. You're afraid to take that extra tip on pass or that extra out the back, and we tend to just truck it up. And they were up for that. Mm. They were quite physical. Mm. But I thought as well that they might lose their shape more as the game went on. Their tempo would drop because they wouldn't be as conditioned as us. Our condition is top notch. A lot of their guys looked out of condition at times. But I suppose the fact they were able to slow the rucks, we couldn't generate the tempo to hurt them, and they were able to survive in terms of getting off the ground and just coming up and hitting us.
Yeah. So Carberry then, Rory, he's out for 6, 7, 8 weeks, give or take?
Looks like it, yeah. Okay. Which is really unfortunate because we all saw what he could do. He's one of these players that puts bums on seats. He has so much attacking potential. The fact that he stepped off both feet for that try was phenomenal. And he showed a lot of the signs that we wanted to see from him. Maybe not the control in that when the game went against Ireland and the ball was slowed down, that 40 to 60 minute before he was forced off an injury. That was unfortunate.
What would you like him to do there more?
It's the small things. It's the decisions. I don't think Marmion helped him. I thought Marmion was quite sluggish. Again, the ball was slow and was maybe it's kicking in behind. Maybe it's turned Nagusa and Nadolo a bit more, because when Leinster play against them, Johnny's very good at making those decisions and going, hang on, maybe we're going nowhere with
the
ball.
I think they were worried as well. I think we didn't kick tactically as much as we normally would. Even though we did kick quite a bit, it was a lot of the time we ran from a bit deeper was the giveaway for me. We kicked as much as we did against South Africa, but we had a lot more possession. So I think the giveaway there is we ran from deep a few times, and that might have been the plan, not to kick to Fiji, because, you know, they're probably the worst team in the world to kick to if you don't have it right on the money. Mm. And we know with someone like Murray or Sexton, so maybe George Smith was thinking, maybe I might get that level of accuracy with the two halfbacks I have, bringing them onto us. So they probably didn't kick as much as we normally do, and that maybe is why they kept it in hand more, when it might have been at times better to ping the corner. There's just that reticence to put it into the backfield, maybe afraid of what was going to come back at you, you know?
Okay,
well, it's strange. Leinster played against those two wingers from Montpellier and have done massive damage in the air against them. So it's not, they shouldn't have been afraid of it. And tweeting him almost clocked one clean and was through. So
yeah, it's a fair point. But Carberry generally did himself no harm at all, and just, you know, showed the nice little touches, the steps that we see at provincial level certainly are translating thus far to international level.
It's just such a pity he's not going to be around the Christmas, which is when Johnny's going to be given his little holiday, and Leinster probably have a little bit of scope to put him in for the derbies, because that would have been, you'd love
and
him to...
And it is a problem going forward.
Well, Schmidt said, look,
it's an
imperfect world, and Joey Carberry's not going to get any game time at 10, really, at Leinster. It's beyond our control.
Yeah. I am happy, though, we've proven he is a fly half.
More than a 15 any day of the week.
I think so.
Okay.
I really do. I've always felt that.
But for the next 2-3 years, is number 15 and getting him on the pitch one way or another? Where is he in the pecking order for 15 just to get him on the pitch?
I think he's probably 2-3 at the moment if Jarrod Payne is not fit. Jarrod Payne gets fit, I think, with the cluster of players we have in the midfield now, and I'm talking about Ringrose coming back, Henshaw, Bundy Aki, and Payne. If Payne is available, there's four frontline centres. I think one of them, you have to get one of them on the field for sure, and that's probably Payne can go to full back. And I think that if Payne's back in the mix at fullback with Kearney and Conway has proved himself, where's Carberry on that? And I still think, to be fair to the lad, if he's going to play international 10, he needs to play 10 as much as possible.
Does he need to leave Leinster in the short term?
He may have to consider that possibility for his career. That's something, it's kind of, it'll be anarchy to say that now because he is so important to Leinster. But he's playing fullback for Leinster. What happens when Rob Kearney comes back for Leinster and Jonathan Sexton's fit? Like, what happens there is Rob Kearney lose out to Carberry, even though Joe Schmidt might have Kearney ahead of Carberry. Like, there's a lot of conundrums there. And I've no doubt that Joe Schmidt will have to sit down with Leo Cullen and say, look, this is what I'm thinking. What are you thinking? Let's try and find a way here. Because he does need to play 10. I think he did extraordinarily well on Saturday at 10, given that he hasn't played at 10 for so long.
Yeah.
But realistically, going forward as an international out half, he has to play there.
It's not sustainable for you to dip
into 10. It's not fair to him. He could get by, but it's not fair. I don't think it's fair to the player. It's a massive leap up to, like, international. If he has to go into a Six Nations game against England in Twickenham, let's say Johnny Sexton got injured and he hasn't played 10 since last Saturday, That's an unbelievable ask for the guy, you know. And then if it goes wrong for him, we'll all be jumping up and down and it might be his fault at all. I know we're not going to fix it in that time frame, but if that happened in that time frame, it'd be a problem. So he does have to think about, I think his future is at 10. He's proven that without a shadow of a doubt. And it's a tricky one, but he does need to play there, I think. That's my own opinion.
It seems to be, I mean, you listen to everyone, you listen to Rod, you listen to anyone who's played the position. They talk about the benefit of air miles really kicking in mid-20s on, late-20s on. Experience is so important. I dare say none of us think he can clock up some kind of quality air miles in training, which is not possible.
No, it's not. And for all that he's learning alongside Johnny Sexton and seeing the master at work on a day-to-day basis, you know, he'd probably get benefit a lot more from leading a back line out week in, week out in the Pro 14 and in Europe. So, it's a major issue. I think I'm pretty sure he's in contract. He's not up this year, so the likelihood is that he's going to be at Leinster until the World Cup, unless they can arrange some sort of loan move for him somewhere for
to
a year.
I'm sure if he's going to have a lot of suitors.
Oh, yeah.
His contract's up and they will come asking him to play in the 10 position.
But you think Johnny's probably going to retire in 2019? You know, you never know, but he's, you know, his age profile would suggest that
you leaked something here.
Putting two and two together. What is he, 32? He'd be 34 then. He's been through a lot. I think there's a plan there that Joey will, you know, in 2019, will probably at 24, which was the age that Johnny Sexton made his actual breakthrough, will, you know, step in there when Ross Byrne is his competition. But, you know, you're planning long term for a guy who's actually good enough in the here and now to play. And that, I don't know if he's good enough to challenge Johnny Sexton just yet. I think for Ireland's number 22, he's perfect, except for that scenario that Twickenham, Six Nations on the line, Johnny goes down
or
after 2 minutes.
Quarter-final.
Or Ian Madigan all over again, you know, and Argentina this week. It's a reminder of how grim that was when we lost all our frontrunners.
Yeah, it might depend on his personality as well. He might be itching to only play 10 deep down and want to develop as a 10 as quickly as possible. And then he might try and hasten things and maybe look for a loan move. His kicking, obviously, is a slight concern, especially because he's not kicking for Leinster either. That's another difficulty if he has to suddenly jump in at 10 at international level. We had Andy Dunn on OTB AM this morning. He was speaking to Jair and Owen, and he was just making the point that, look, maybe realistically, Carberry doesn't have to kick.
Well, the alternative is just get on with it and stop focusing on the fact he doesn't place kick. Stephen Larkham was 120 caps for Australia as an out half and never took a place kick in his life. Nobody had a problem with that. Bowden Barrett has an awful success rate. Nobody's a problem with that. I mean, if we try and make Joey Carberry like Johnny Sexton, we're going to fail. Yeah. And I don't see why we have to make everyone a prototype of Johnny Sexton.
So get Conor Murray to take the kicks? Or
get someone else to do it, yeah. They're all international players. And I think people tend to focus on, okay, he's hit a post, he's missed. Who says he has to take the place kicks in the first place? He can do things nobody else can and let him at it.
Yeah, that's pretty radical though, right? Like,
well, yeah. When you think it's international football as well. You'd like to think there's at least two or three guys, although I can't name any off the top of my head. But, you know, at any provincial level, there's got to be guys who are also going out and practicing their place kicking.
Yeah.
I do think it's uniquely... well, it's not uniquely Irish, but it's certainly Northern Hemisphere that 10 has to place kick.
Yeah.
Because down in the Southern
Hemisphere...
Well,
the French would obviously have nines who would have kicked.
Nines, 15s, centres, you know. Yeah. I think it's something that we probably just need to take off his shoulders and allow him play the type of game. I mean, I think some of the calls where he got injured or where he nearly got knocked unconscious just before that, I think they were the same calls on repeat that, I mean, he sliced them open with that play. It's the Sexton loop play. And it was superb. And he managed to convert a line break into a score, which is harder again to do. It doesn't always convert.
The Sweetenham try.
Yeah. But he then recalled it and called it again. And I think there was an element of trying to replicate what Johnny would do in those scenarios. Whereas if he'd have just read it
himself,
used his own instincts, I don't believe he'd have called those things. I think we need to give the guy a bit of freedom to express himself within what is the team structure. Maybe take the place kicking duties away from him and we could reap the rewards.
By Dunner's own admission there, not being able to name the guy who would take the kicks is probably a slight chink
that
in the plan.
That is a problem.
Yeah. It's also affecting another selection. It's you're then picking a player because he can goal kick somewhere else in the back line. And there's no one, we believe Conor Murray can kick, we've seen him practice, but he's never very rarely done it.
Taking a kick at the end of a game because, you know, someone's gone down. But going out as a frontline kicker, start of a game, when you get a chance to maybe build a score and tick over, those first 3, 6, 9 points we saw against South Africa were so crucial.
The other thing is Murray won't be kicking for Munster either. He'll be coming in a little bit cold.
Yeah, I just think that Dunner is right. I wouldn't disagree with him that if he's not a kicker, then it's a flawed idea to force him into that role because he happens to be the 10. It doesn't have to be the 10, but the problem with the alternative, if he doesn't kick, who does? Mm. And that affects your selection. Now you're picking a guy to kick penalties.
Fergus McFadden. Fergus McFadden's the only outside back who would have, I think, a reasonable professional return who has done it. Rob Kearney did it at a young age and gave it up because he felt like he needed to focus his efforts on other things.
And it was the same when Rog was there. If Rog didn't kick him, you know, for every reason, there was no obvious follow-up for him, you know. And we're not talking about taking the odd conversion. We're talking about someone who's going to get the scoreboard taken over or kick a crucial penalty with 20 minutes to go far out on the right that gets you ahead for the last 20 minutes. Like, all those
Ringrose
things
was a good goal kicker in school.
Was he?
Yeah, pick it up again.
How far off the pace is Carberry anyway? Schmidt said his kicking has absolutely improved. He's doing it in training all the time, which we're not seeing.
It's the same language we hear about Beauden Barrett and the same things that Steve Hansen says about Beauden Barrett. And Barrett contributes so much in the attacking game that New Zealand generally don't miss it when he misses goal kicks, but it cost him the Lions series probably, you know. He's what, 3 or 4 years older than Carberry. He's kind of, Carberry's following a similar route to that than Barrett is, and Barrett hasn't got his goal kicking right. So it's, you can see the same pattern being repeated.
But there must be lots of goal kickers who improve dramatically between early 20s and mid 20s.
There's two sides, but one is the hours on the field, you know, the repetition. And then there's the pressure. You layer the pressure on top of that. Like the golfer, can he hold his swing under pressure?
Sure.
And that's the only way he's going to do that, by the way, if he's out there every Saturday kicking in Pro 14 and European Cup games where the pressure is really on every Saturday.
So I don't see Johnny Sexton saying, do you want to kick today?
Not going to happen, I would think. And fair enough too, Johnny is the guy who's been doing the business. So why would he do that?
100%. So that's Carberry. You said the centre pairing, it kind of didn't do anything majorly wrong, didn't do anything spectacular. That kind of feels the case for most players. Did anyone dramatically put their hand up, Carberry aside?
I think Jack Conan, for me, did a lot of work, kind of saw his opportunity, talked about it during the week, knew this was it, but he's in an insanely difficult department to break into. There's three lines in front of him, and that's not counting Jimmy Heaslip, was injured, you know. And then you have Reece Ruddock, who's tearing it up as well, came off the bench last week in South Africa, was outstanding. Like it's a lot of guys to climb over to get a start, but I think Conan is the kind of fella just keep plugging away and hope his chance will come. Mm. I think Jordy Murphy had one of those days that he'd probably want to forget, where he just for whatever reason didn't get into the game. Maybe it was a lack of match fitness. Maybe it was sometimes the game doesn't run for you. But he had a quiet game, and in that department he needed to light it up. And he just didn't get that done, and that's unfortunate for him because he's a better player than he looked on Saturday. So you'd feel sorry for him, but as I said, the opportunities for him now are going to be few and far between unless there's some stack of injuries in the Six Nations. He's not going to probably get a chance again.
And you're a perfect man to ask, how big a black mark is the intercept pass from Dave Kearney against him, or is that quickly forgotten?
No, I think it won't be quickly forgotten because he's an experienced player. He should have known that running diagonally to the line and throwing a long pass is never a good outcome. You know, that you do two bad things, run diagonally, throw a long pass at the line. And I think it left his hands. You could see his face, the horror on his face, because he knew nothing good was going to happen. And he should have been, you know, more experienced. Just I think he ran too laterally to execute the overlap, but he should have just tucked it and taken it up. But look, they're like the old things. You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. It's done now. But I think, to be fair, it's not his form. He's played before and he doesn't make those mistakes. So I don't think it's going to define him at all.
Yeah.
And other than that, he had a very solid game. But again, his opportunities are limited when you see the guys who are hanging around the wing now. You know, Stockdale, like Earls gets fit again.
Mm.
Again, you know, Conway had a very good game. You know, so that's a difficult place to get back into now. And there's other guys floating around, like I suppose like Craig Gilroy, Fergus McFadden, Joe Schmidt likes him a lot.
Mm.
You still have Bowen Trimble floating around, you know, you never know there. And so I just think it's one of those, it's just about opportunity again, and he mightn't get it.
Yeah.
He mightn't get it.
One last point in Ireland before we just move on to give a general take on next week and the other weekend action is that I dare say we've gone from a point where Eddie O'Sullivan must have woken up at nights just to think, is John Hayes okay wherever he is in the world right now, to not an embarrassment of riches, but it feels like as healthy a front row in particular and pack maybe as we've had in a long time.
I still think there's risk of tight head, and Andrew Porter, while he did well, I think he's now one that'll be sent off to play Leinster A and come off the bench.
He's in that position.
Yeah, I mean he has so much potential. You just look at his shape and his size.
It's a massive step as well across the tight head from loose head. It's much easier to play loose head than tight head in the modern game. But he made the step, you know.
He did well.
I thought he had a fine game. He didn't do anything spectacular, just got a good job done. But he's on track.
Yeah.
But there's still a road in front of him. He's not there yet.
Okay. Everywhere else is good. I'm not sure about a reserve hookers. I still prefer to see Sean Cronin coming off the bench
at
60 minutes.
I think Cronin's got a hard deal there. Because
especially a game like Saturday where you want an injection of something.
Yeah, he comes off the bench and he just lights it up every time. Mm. It's just that first three paces is electric for a hooker, and he loves carrying. I mean, when he gets out against tired defences, he kills them in the last 20.
Yeah.
He starts at times. He has the odd howler, but I just think I thought Herring, you know, had a quietish game. Like, he didn't do anything spectacular. You would have thought he had a chance for him to really trot on a marker.
Mm.
And I suppose James Tracy getting the nod in Leinster ahead of Sean hasn't helped Sean's case either. But I'd be a fan of Sean Cronin. I think he's a lot to contribute.
Yeah. So elsewhere across the weekend, Italy 15, Argentina 31. Wales beat Georgia 13 points to 6. I didn't see that game. Doesn't sound
just
like
a bit
it
of
was
controversy in the end about the scrums.
Is that right?
Yeah, Wales went down to on the post scrums on their own line. They had another
France
injury.
France did to them in the Six Nations.
Yeah, France revisited, but one player had got cramps and the other had an ice pack on his calf, so they couldn't go on, and they'd on a post scrum, and the Georgians then got stopped and turned over. But Georgians would swear if they had a proper scrum, they were going to push it in for a penalty try and get the draw.
Right.
And the way they were scrummaging, it'd be hard to argue against them.
There was no blood coming out their mouth, was there?
There was no blood involved, but I think there was. It was one of those ones that didn't just look right.
England beat Australia 30 points to 6, although late tries, 13 wins in the bounce at Twickenham for England. It seems Australia controlled a lot of this game for good chunks of it.
They did, and they would you know, Checker bit his lip, and I'd say
he's still in trouble. I think
the TMO decisions, every 50-50 went in England's favour. Some of them were right, some of them you'd have to question. I mean, they looked at that ball on the line for an age, the ball bounced, this kick that looked like it was going out. Now, Curtly Beale should never have given up on it, but it bounced. Like, I don't know how he made a decision either way, to be honest. All those little things went in
first
England's favour.
Slow try was...
Yeah, because he brought him back onside. You know, it's just Ireland are going there looking for, you know, could be going there looking for Six Nations. It's not a place you want to go looking for 52 decisions.
Mind you, it was one of those games that it was chucking down rain.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, no matter how good the teams are, it's about making the least number of mistakes. It was one of those days, it was just sheeting down all day. So... Mm. Probably suited England more than Australia, because England's attack has been stammering and stuttering, and a game where they really were probably going to go to the air or ping it in behind suited them, because Australia would have preferred to keep the ball in hand, and it was almost a liability in the weather. So I suppose at the end of the day, the England muscled them, but I would have loved to have seen the game if on a dry ball. I think it might have been a different game of rugby.
Mm. New Zealand picked it out of the fire against Scotland, 22 points to 17. Sonny Bill made a break and Barrett went over, and then France 17, South Africa 18. They play Japan next weekend. France, is Guy Noves under big pressure?
Well, 7 wins out of 20.
Like, will he be gone by the Six Nations at this rate?
I don't think he'll be gone. I don't think they do it that way in France. They tend to believe that the national coach is a kind of a sacred cow in some ways, that he should be left get on with his philosophy and impose his philosophy on the team. And even if it's different than everybody else, you've got to give him time. I think he's got, if he, as long as he's got the support of Bernard Laporte, he's fine. But I think Laporte would be probably more likely to put pressure on now, because we're getting near 2 years out of the World Cup. It's time for, but I think 7 wins out of 20 is starting to ratchet up, and I think a bad Six Nations now would certainly raise the crisis. But as always with the French, you never know. They show up like they were horrible against New Zealand the week before and almost reeled them in the second half. The only thing is that they're still depending on their emotion, and where they have got innate skills, huge physicality. But when it comes down to technical, tactical, they're wanted to play in that mode, which is the way every team plays nowadays. They don't seem to be able to manage that without losing their way.
One last point I was curious. I'll throw it to either of you if you have a strong feeling on it. Yesterday, between the Sunday Business Post and the Sunday Independent and the Sunday Times and various papers, there was the what went wrong with Ireland's World Cup bid and various angles on what went wrong. And certainly one of the common themes was that the Irish bid feel very let down by the Scottish and the Welsh, and there were last minute delegations sent over, and every political avenue was used, and there was even, they did convince the Scottish and Welsh boards to have another meeting to double check just a week before the vote, we're definitely going with South Africa and France. And the bottom line was relations are very frosty at the moment. In real terms, does that matter a damn?
It probably doesn't help the running of the Pro and the growth of the Pro 14, because these are the people who are driving it.
Italy can expect any favours from us.
I mean,
Italy did, by the way, they said, look, they were embarrassed to have to pick between Ireland and France, but they just felt France was the better bid. And also, they did note that Ireland didn't support
neighbours.
Yeah, well, they did note as well, Ireland didn't support us for the 2015 bid we had. They went with England. So they did throw that in there as well. But I read all this and it seems like, oh, no one's talking to each other at the moment, but really, is it a big deal?
I think they'll just plug along, but if it ever comes to one needing a favour more than the other,
right?
I think there won't be any favours given now after that. This will feel bad for a long time, because had Wales, as it turns out, even pitched us on the first round, it could have been the difference.
Yeah.
And the fact that they had to support their committee guy, I mean, doesn't stand up to examination, because England didn't feel any need to support Bill Bond.
No.
So,
and even the Scottish logic of we're picking the country which will generate the most money, like, I think ultimately that will, the difference that the French bid will generate is about 62 million over 4 years. Like, from a Scottish point of view, you're talking somewhere between 1 and 2 million. That doesn't stack up. No.
You just wonder, will there be, you know, will there be a World Cup warm-up in Murrayfield against France? Or, you know, will there be little, you know, these sort of things that generally come out in the wash from all these sort of things that the Scots...
Well, you'd like to think that the whole thing doesn't hinge on small potatoes like that.
Oh, I'd say you'll see France playing test matches in Singapore and the UAE and all over the place.
I think where this comes into play, Joe, is when there's something like the Heineken Cup crisis and the Scots ended up voting with the English and basically selling the Heineken Cup down the ERC down a river. And when we get reached, as we seem to in rugby every 4 or 5 years, and the latest professional crises, there's no alliance. Ireland are out on their own. Like, they were very keen to keep the European Cup as it was, the way it was, but the Welsh and the Scots sided with BT money and stuff like that. So if Ireland are out on their own, our interest is lost when these big decisions come out in the wash. And not having good relationships with the people who run our league with us is ultimately not going to be a good thing, even though it might not affect the day-to-day running for the next couple of years.
Okay. Rory, thanks very much. Eddie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Joe.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.